Dumelang Thobela, and hello and welcome to this week's news wrap brought to you by the SL Cabinet. I am your host today, well, every day, Gwena Mashale, joined by my colleagues Herman Molloy and Nandi Intini. Guys, say hello for the listeners.
Hello.
So we are the youth of today, bringing you all things new and current affairs through our eyes. I hope you stick with us today as we look at the week's bigger stories, talk about the controversies, and laugh about the weird ones. Let's dive right in. So first on the list today is the Spaza shop deadline, guys. It's today, right, Nandi?
Yeah,
it's today. So far, only 1,464 of the 17,290 applications received by the Gauteng municipalities have been approved, right? So, Nandi, you were doing the story, right? Just explain to us exactly when they say approved, what does it mean?
So, when they say approved, it's that you have the permit, you complied, the health certificate, you paid your zoning, everything is in order. So out of the 17,
it's 1.4, only that 1.4.
That 1.4 in Gauteng. And they also made an emphasis in Ekurhuleni, for instance. They say that they don't care if your application is still pending or not. If you did not apply or your application is pending, your spaza shop as of tomorrow will be issued with a closing notice. So it means, even though you applied, you went to that extent, because most of the shop owners that I spoke to on Thursday mentioned that the only thing, the only problem is the fact that they have to go back and forth to get the certificate. So this one lady said that the only thing that's left is for her to pay the 950 for health certificate and the zoning, which is 400 rands. So she said that I can't even make that money for profit a month. So it's like I'm stranded. She doesn't know what's going to happen after today.
But I guess I get it, because a lot of the times I'm seeing here that the Gauteng Department of Economic Development has admitted that the registration process for spaza shops is slow and chaotic. And they're blaming it obviously on capacity constraints. They don't have the capacity. Which is weird, because I thought Maile said that they would be bringing in all the forces that they can to assist with everyone to make the speedy recovery. I guess we'll hear from Maile either this week or next week, because knowing him, he'd want to have a whole press briefing on this thing. Herman, do you want to
add to this? When you say 950, what does she say?
So she sells like your ordinary. It's part of this mini tuck shop, Nyana, where you sell your rice, your bread. Your rice, your bread, your snacks. It's 950, you would go and stock with that money, basically. Okay.
The reason I'm asking is because in Tshwane, I spoke to some vendors. They spoke about 570. So I don't know how they calculate it. Maybe it's according to municipalities. And then again, a highlighting thing that I think is that the fact that they're saying, if you don't have the permit and everything, that means you are trading illegally and it will be a criminal offense. You'll be arrested. But Tlabisa said this thing is an ongoing thing. So even in March, if you have the desire to open a spaza shop, you can just go and register.
But I get it. I think it comes with the thing way of, even if you are going through the process of registering, you won't be operating. Am I understanding it right?
Yeah, but it differs with different municipalities, and also with provinces, because in Limpopo, they're saying the pending ones, you can still operate. Yeah. We know that you at least you did something. Yeah. But Ekurhuleni, it seems like they are so strict, because it looks like they started in June. So that's why they are so strict with this whole process.
Despite that, remember Ekurhuleni is a way to, it's way by, we've seen
a lot of cases. So they should be, you would expect them to be more strict and more harsher. But I think in all honesty, it would be a thing where it's two-sided, because the spaza shop owners can then come back and say, yeah, but your guys' process is very, very strict. You guys require so much of us. Remember at the beginning, they were even saying that the deadline is short notice, because they have to do so much. So now you have someone who's complaining about the 950 and says that I don't even make 950 in my profit. So am I supposed to get the 950? And that then you have the municipality saying, ish, it's slow. We don't have the capacity to do it. So it's like there's two sides of the thing where there's a lot going on, But Tabisa, like Herman was saying that there will be no extension for this puzzle shop registration, and that the ministry will not even recommend to the president that he extends the deadline again. Let's listen.
These people, spaza shop owners and the other food handlers, the fat cook sellers, they control billions of rands. If you combine all of them throughout South Africa, the money that exchanges from their hands to clients accumulates to billions on a daily basis. So they are a backbone of the local economic development of the economy of our country. I want to conclude by saying there will be no extension. Tomorrow is a deadline. There will be no extension. We are not going to make any recommendation to the president. There was enough time for people to register from the extension made in December up to tomorrow. But any person who wants to get into this business, if he or she is unable to meet the deadline tomorrow, the registration application process will be going on.
But all in all, guys, what do you guys think of the process so far? Has it been good? Has it been slow? What do you make of it? Because I also understand that I'm more focused on Gauteng. So sorry. It's not that I don't care about the other provinces, but it's just more Gauteng. It's just that in Gauteng, you are seeing the MEC highlighting even who or the nationals in regards to the applications. I don't know if you remember, he was even pointing out the 20 Pakistanis registered. So I'm like, what are you guys getting from that? So I don't know, Herman, is it the same in Swanee where they are highlighting the national or what? Does it really matter if you're a national or what?
For me, I was not invested in this movie, not because I don't care, but then I was doing other things. But then the process seems like it's a bit complicated because you need to go to training, and also you are told to this thing can take a day, but you need health certificate, you need people to come and assess your venue, you need zoning permit, you need
people to, you go around the community asking residents, do you agree
you need a training for food handling, which takes about 2 weeks. You still need to wait for their call to say, okay, we are granting you to the next stage. So it's a bit complicated, although this guy always emphasized that it can take you a day. Uthabisa, it can take you a day, but it seems impossible. Because even when you go to the application center, they will need you that. They'll need you that. The zoning thing and everything. Also, issue of money. People are complaining that we don't have money. We don't even make that much. 570. I understand that once you got your license to trade, you're going to pay 120 or 150 per month. It's a good thing that they are doing it, but then just at what cost?
At what cost, yes, Simon. Because you take an informal business that does not know anything about your zoning, your compliance, and then all of a sudden you're telling me to move from one post to the next. Because they said that, yes, I hear Uthabisa saying that you can do that in one day, but different venues. Is he aware that you have to go through different steps and taking a taxi to that, to Jimiston, Alberton, where for you to get all that information. And also, I didn't think also they thought it through for, the people who stay in the informal settlement. Because another issue that economic development mentioned is the fact that some owners cannot be approved because they are in an unclaimed settlement. So what's going to happen to them? So it means my business is going to be shut down because I don't have an address. My place is still informal.
I think that also speaks to the municipality itself. But we will dive much deeper into that, guys. Moving on. So I think was it Tuesday? So the Defence Minister, Angie Motshekga, described the Military Veterans Unit, the department itself, within her department, as a wrecked and sinking ship that needs all the assistance it can get, right? So she was speaking at the at Parliament before the Standing Committee on Public Accounts. This was after the Vatican, the Auditors General, came to with a report stating that basically the military department, Veterans Department, does not have any kind of leadership. It's a messed up department. I think, honestly, at this point, I feel like the Auditors General says that it are about every department, but it is what it is. And let's listen to her explain it in her own words about the problem.
The point I wanted to make as a parting shot, you know, you are in a department where there's never been an HOT for more than 2 years. Complete instability. The most it is 2.5 years, 18 months they run away, 2 years they run away. So that's the level of instability. You talk about a department where there are no policies and systems. That's why I said we can't even deny the dysfunctionality. We have cases right, left and center of millionaires who are military veterans. They stay at Stain City. They take you to court because you are paying 20,000 for school fees because their kids don't go there. So there's no means test. So anybody, if you've been there, you have a system where, and when I came to the department, the first question I asked to say, how did we come to 65,000? Because I knew when the NC came out from exile, we're told that there are about 20,000. MK came with 5. There's no reason why we've exceeded even 40%. And that's why I'm happy, 40,000. That's why I'm happy with the CETA proposal that you are bringing, because unless you have policies and systems, you're not going to do anything in the department. You have people who are wannabe military veterans who managed to make their way to the database and all sorts of difficulties. So we'll explain that, but I was going to humbly request that, or even explain that we're trying to do all we can to save the sinking ship, and I'm really grateful that Chair is willing to assist, but it is indeed a wrecked ship that we're dealing with. It's a wrecked ship.
So essentially, she's saying that most of the people are not even qualified. They're not supposed to be where they are. She even gave an example of an internal auditor who doesn't even have the qualifications to be there. She also gave an example of how some people even sue the department for them to pay their kids' school fees amounted to 20,000 rand, which they're not even supposed to be paying for. So guys, comments?
So for me, two things, Nay. It's about qualifications. It's about the suing. It seems like it's a trend in every department. You find people who are not qualified to do the work. But then because of tailor deployment, they are there. And they are running the ship. They are sinking the ship because you don't have the knowledge or the capacity to drive things forward. That's why I feel like our defense is suffering at this point, because we don't have the right people for the job. I mean, we have Dinel, which produces best military equipment, but because we had people who were in that area that did the things that they did, now we still have an arms deal case that is pending. And then the suing, it seems like everyone in G wants to, I decide to sue. I mean, how many cases when you go to Safil page whereby they are suing Minister of Police, they are suing Minister of what? And I mean, taking that money, yes, when you feel like there's something that happened to you that is not proper, you can. But you can't be asking for 20 million because you were shot during a strike and you were at the strike. And then now you're asking for 20 million. Okay, be reasonable. I'm not saying you don't have to. Yeah, that's my thing.
No, I think Hemen and the swing part, it makes sense. Because we see a lot of statements. We are taking who and who to court. I'm not going to mention the party, but they should reconsider how they do things. But in terms of the qualifications, I mean, SANDF hires every year, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they have the opportunity to restructure. And it's when they have this thing from 18 to 26. You need to have your matric, that part, and then if you have your qualification, your tertiary level, then this is where we're gonna place you. What's happening with those kids? Are they all going? Not kids, sorry guys. What's happening to those people? Are they all going to
Do you know what I think it is? I don't think it's a matter of the bottom feeders. Mm. I don't think it's the bottom feeders who are causing the rau rau. I think it's the top.
The top. Agree. Like, when I come from the bottom, I have my qualifications. Mm. Why can't I go all the? Why don't they shift?
No.
Restructure. Because they are ghost employees who are seniors.
Mm.
So that's the problem.
And then we go around blaming Angie, guys.
Sorry. No, but
she is accounting.
She's the minister, so she must reshuffle.
But guys, she has to start from scratch.
Speaking of the minister, because I was about to say, Guri, we are asking the qualifications, we're asking qualifications. I mean, it works the same way in government heads, guys. Where are the qualifications for most of these ministers in their spots?
Structuring, like, really.
Johnston, sorry. Let me just stop there. I'm moving on. Let's move on. Okay, so another interesting thing that happened this week. An alleged kingpin of Belizean gold mining, uBethuel Ngobeni, has skipped the start of his trial nearly 3 months after his bail was revoked and a warrant for his arrest has been issued. Herman, tell us more about Ngobeni.
So, basically, uBethuel pulled uBushiri's stunt.
Mm.
He got bail. He ran away.
Yeah.
But what's funny is that when he applied for bail for the third time, I think, when he was granted bail, he raised new facts. But then when you go to the document, you listen to the new facts. There's no new facts. So you get to ask yourself, the magistrate who granted him bail, what was the reason?
Mm.
And also, what's funny is that police saying the arrest is imminent. And one of the conditions was that he must sign every week. Mm. So you ask yourself, when last did he sign? The police don't want to say. So yeah, that's the story. This guy got bail and then he attended some of the cases. And then when the bail was revoked, that's when he disappeared.
But whom? So now he's still on the run even now?
He's on the run.
Mm. And nowhere to
No one knows.
But the Ubu Paganjani bail Umuntu who has identity theft, guys.
The identity is in question, but the judge decided, this guy needs to go.
We trust you,
guys, maybe the lawyer made a really good case.
No.
Gwena, the magistrate, you make the final say. No matter how Gwena, we present our matters
this
in
guy,
court.
Okay, so four things that he complained with.
Mm.
Is that his son has a Down syndrome, is that his municipal rates are going up. I mean, you're a prisoner, you should. He spoke about his health, he spoke about his mental health since he has been incarcerated.
Mm.
So there was nothing annulling value that he said on his reasons to apply for new bail on new facts.
Yeah.
So, it shows that our justice system has paused.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it has paused, but then again, they just withdrew a case from uKabelo Gwamanda. So, that one I think was also interesting when we found out. The man went through so much, they made such a spectacle when he was arrested. And I think someone was asking, was it you who was asking me that now that he's free, why is the spectacle to say, we apologize? So, but then again, guys, he's not technically free. It's a provisional withdrawal.
That means they can.
They can still restate it. So we will see what happens, though. But hopefully, the poor man, I guess, if he's innocent, he's innocent. If he's not innocent, I'm a bop.
We can never know.
That's the thing. But anyway, guys, moving on, right, to education. So basically, the basic education Lekgotla launched yesterday. I was there the whole day. It was very interesting. And the minister spoke on the backlash for the portable school desks. So, guys, if you have not been literally on social media, they have been multiple desks of children, either McDonald's branded, Old Mutual branded, Celsi branded, and it's been going away. And especially, the funny part is, it's especially in Eastern Cape. Mm. It's mostly in Eastern Cape that we're seeing these things, right? So it's about around 100 children received these wheelie bags, where that you can convert it from a desk and into a chair, right? And apparently it includes a solar light and a USB charging point, charging port. So I don't know what kids will be charging, but sure, a charging port. So the minister spoke to the media on Thursday addressing this and saying she was defending the desk. She was like, they 100%, regardless of what is going on, they are for the desks. And if anything, they really need the help, all the help they can get. Let's take a listen.
Firstly, these desks have been approved by UNESCO. They are 2 kilograms heavy, and they've indicated, UNESCO has indicated that this is absolutely appropriate. And remember, not every child has to take the desk home. They may leave some of these desks there, and they convert into school bags. But what is important for me is that there are children in this country who go home to places and homes where they don't have even an area to do their homework. The reason why this was even something that was even endorsed by the Department of Science and Technology is because it's innovative. It allows a child who comes from a poor home where there's no electricity to have, firstly, a light that allows them to do their homework. Secondly, it also allows them to be able to have a space to be able to do their homework. Of course, if you've got space at home, you may not need it. But I promise you, if you're a child from Mkanduli, where it's a small house, there's no place for you to do your homework, you will appreciate being able to do that. So, one, on the safety of the carrying of the desk, that has been scientifically proven to us by scientists.
Essentially, guys, at the end of the day, it's a matter of, she's saying that they do not have the financial constrained themselves. They are very much financially constrained, and they are relying more and more on corporate partnerships. But in their understanding is that it's a matter of where do they draw the line on the brand, branding of the equipment that they get. Nandi, I see you're very vocal there. Give us your 2 cents.
You know what I like? Kitty comments that you'll see all the selfie people, all the selfie kids there. Mm. They're just advertising it. But also, my problem is, can't they maybe put something more jolly instead of the brand? We know that Celsius sponsored McDonald's, and McDonald's has been doing good, well, in giving back to the community. But it can be just tips there. We know McDonald's did this. But imagine now, guys... And they're just dragging them from home and gravel in everything.
McDonald's. I saw the pictures, Nandi, of the children dragging
them. It's not funny. It's not. Guys, we don't have proper roads in the rural areas.
What will happen? In a month, will probably break. How many comments?
But then, again, it's marketing. These people are in business. So you need marketing. Forget about how big it is or how small it is. Even when you go, there's always a challenge of the biggest billboard. Mm-hmm. Umusimaiman, we saw him. It didn't pay out, but yeah, he did it. So I don't have a problem with the branding. Also, we have a shortage of desks in schools. Mm-hmm. So this tries to mitigate the situation. Speaking about its weight... I think that's the question to say what we do.
Mm.
Do we leave them at school? And then we have criminals. You have written about stories about criminals going to schools and doing everything.
Mm.
So for me, the only thing is just wait, nothing else. I don't have any problem with whatever it's happening.
But who's this education spokesperson?
Eastern Cape education spokesperson.
He did mention that some of them may be left at school, but my problem is
here's my 2 cents. My 2 cents is, what is different about this when Colgate does it? Colgate, have you guys seen that advert? Colgate going to schools and says that 90% of children don't know what a toothbrush is. Have you seen that advert?
Hence, I say the marketing. Everyone is in.
Everybody is at school.
And the more they talk about you, the more you make money.
Literally, I think remember it's the same thing with the Pick and Pay and Recross. I remember. Yes, I was listening to Power FM, and literally the whole time, they're talking about Pick and Pay and Recross, right? So somebody comes on and says that, "Hey Joe, you just did Pick and Pay at a free advertisement.
Yeah.
For 40 minutes, you were talking about Pick and Pay." And that's free advertisement in itself. So in essence, I don't think it's a bad thing. because at the end of the day, both sides are, it's a win-win situation for both sides.
Yeah.
The kids are getting a desk and McDonald's is getting marketing. And also this thing of somebody, because I was also, but now you have civil organizations like ISERI. ISERI comes in and says, no, because I read, I don't know if you guys read their statement, but I read their statement and they're arguing that it will cause children to be closer to obesity and sickness and illness.
No.
Because they will see this McDonald's and want to have. That was what
no,
I understood.
I think in that
that
part,
is what I understood they would from the not, statement.
For me, I think they would love McDonald's more, not to eat it, but they would appreciate McDonald's for not in that extent.
I feel like you must go read the statement, please, because they're literally arguing that children are being used as market tools and that it will lead to the obesity and health problem.
It's the kid, but it has at McDonald's.
I didn't see where it is, but because my thing is that, well, the kids, guys, it's not like the first time the kids will be seeing McDonald's.
Oh.
The kids see McDonald's every day, Baba Na KFC every day, they see Hungry Lion every day, but you don't see the kids going, I want to eat more.
They were just
I don't see the argument the civil organization is making, but I'll be talking to them this afternoon and hear what more they say, guys. Anyone wants to add more? So now, guys, let's move on, right? So the family of the daughter who was killed by Sekhukhune player Sean Mukhaila in an accident says they did not give the man permission to go, not permission, but to say blessing for him to return to playing, right? So I think we all saw Mukhaila on a pitch. I think there was a picture trending of him kind of being back on the pitch, and people were angry because they were like, "Yo, isi bindi sahai," to go back to playing. But they know the Sekhukhune head coach came out and says that no, Ulisokono Siema says that no, the family of the girl gave Mukhaila the blessing to play. But the family's like, why are you lying? We didn't do that. So let's take a listen to the mother of the 9-year-old who died.
Ukambe amanga ngomdeni wami, wathi thina siwumdeni sibaxolele. Sithe ushona kabuyela odlala ibhola, sithe impilo yaqhubeka sathi siunderstand ingozi senzeka. Izinto zonke esingazikhuluma ngaleso, it's a lie. So bengicela ukuthi ningisize mama, ningisize nabo nethembisa forum, ningisize nabo bonke abantu abangakhona ukusiza obomfanelo everyone. Bazi ukuthi lo muntu uqambe amanga, akakhulumanga nomndeni ever since lento yenzeka. Angali bengisesibhedlela but umndeni wami uchazile ukuthi akaze beze la bazokhuluma or bazoxolisa or bazoyenzani.
And I think at the end of the day, Vela, why are they lying?
Why are they lying? I mean, also now speaking to the family spokesperson, he said that Bona, initially, we wanted to deal with this like silent. So we didn't care whether he went back on the pitch or not.
Yeah.
But the sad part is that they have never visited the family. Since last day, October, saying we are coming to resolve, to apologize, they have never been to Tembisa.
Sorry. But then one of the rules is that you don't speak with your witness in the case, someone who's going to testify, someone who's going to do anything.
Don't say that you spoke to me and I said
an accident can happen
but
to
it's
anyone.
Not him. It's not him, it's his team.
But why the coach?
The same team that said we're going to come and apologize.
No, the team is going to testify at some point. That means you are jeopardizing the case.
Amen.
The thing is that these guys were not forced to do any statement. They felt or they needed to respond because Mukhaila had won man of the match and people were out lashing Sekhukhune. And they felt, okay, let's defend our team.
Mm.
I believe their PR did the horrible job there by writing the statement. That's the only thing. And again, to go into the family to say, did you give him permission or not? It's on what basis?
On what basis?
Because this guy is innocent until proven guilty. By the court of law.
I get that, man, that they're not supposed to meet. But last year when I went to the family, the coach called the family and said, we will come and speak to you.
The matter was not before court.
Listen, we will come and speak to you.
Yes.
The family has been sitting and waiting. Boom, you hear it on
the
radio.
Let's focus on the law. The matter was not before court at that stage.
But they lied, Hemen. You said let's focus on the matter on the law.
Let's dissect it.
Hence, I'm telling you who the PR stunt or the PR team that they hired did a horrible job by writing that statement. There was no need to write that statement.
Honestly, I agree with him, and they should have just kept quiet. They could have kept quiet and let it die out, because it was going to die out. But they decided to release a statement, a shoddy job.
Mm.
But at the same time, now that now aggravates the family. Let's not lie, Hemen. You can't say that does not aggravate me. Not only did I lose my child, but now you are fueling me and saying that I gave you permission after I lost my child. We cannot dispute the emotions of the family and how they are feeling. They felt like you disrespected us by telling us that you were gonna come. First of all, you never came. Firstly, it's disrespect. Sharp, right? I see the court the argument that you're making. But at the end of the day, if you're telling me as a coach, as a head of a team, where one of your members. Yes, fine, innocent until proven guilty, but it may be responsible for the death of my daughter. And you're saying you're going to come and pay your condolences. You have yet to pay your condolences, and yet you still go to release a statement saying that I gave you permission, I gave that player's permission to proceed despite all my grievances. So I think,
his wedding is very wrong. Like, accident happens to everyone.
Two things, guys, two things. We agree that the PR team did a horrible job.
Yes.
I want to convince you that there was no need for the team to even promise them that they will go. And when you raise an issue of condolences, we saw the statement that the team released after the incident, like a day after. So they have done the job to say, we have passed our condolences. The promise, yes, we might have promised that we'll come to your family and everything. But due to the court factors, due to other factors, we can't approach you. The only horrible thing that the team did so far, it's releasing that statement to say, yes, we are doing this. And then the argument that, I just want to close my case, the argument that people say, why is he playing and everything. One thing, innocent until proven guilty. Another thing, he has a case to answer. He needs to make money so that he can answer that case. So he needs to pay his attorney. He needs to pay his advocate. He needs to build his defense, which is a horrible thing because we saw what happened. So now I'm not saying the family is wrong to expose or to share how they feel, but also let's stick to the law. This guy needs to pay his rent also. Let's forget about the case. So he needs to work. The statement was a PR went wrong statement. Yeah, that's my thing. I am not saying the family shouldn't feel hurt, and I'm not advocating for Mukhail. But also I'm saying let's consider both sides.
Yeah, but the family did mention with Bona they would have kept quiet. Like they would have literally kept quiet because they had literally given up and said that everything, the law will take its course. They were fine, but it's just that PR thing that they did. They should have kept quiet.
I think if anything, it's either they did a shoddy job, or they should have taken a few examples from Michael Train. They're very good at PR.
But then there's no way you can
If you can't do it, then leave it. If you want to, you could have asked for advice. But it is what it is, guys.
It's hiring people with senior qualifications, junior qualifications, and hoping that they will make the best job. But yeah,
guys. Anyway, that's all for this week's news wrap. Remember that you can find our latest podcast, review, and subscribe for free on Oyono FM, Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts. You can also find us or follow us on all social media platforms at Sowetan Live. This podcast is a Times Live production, and our producer is Demi Buzo. Don't forget, you can also have a listen to our other podcasts, Sunday Times Politics Weekly, Taking the Rams by the Horns, Business Day Spotlight, The Indigenous Corner with Gogo Zipo, and Deeply Rooted. Thank you for tuning in. Join us again next week for more updates on the bigger stories from me, Gwena, and my colleagues, Nandi and Herman. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Thank you.